3 and 4. This is an important thing. I need help. Okay. First of all, I never taught this class before. I teach other things in the US. I never really did a basic class about advanced molecular biology. And most importantly, I teach in a different education system. Students arrive to us with different backgrounds than you are. So what I did is that I went through Michele's classes from last year and I tried to adapt it to that. But I may be off, so please let me know. If you think I'm going too fast, stop me, ask me questions. If you think I'm going too slow, also tell me, you know, we already know all this. You can go faster. And also, it's just basic interaction. In the US, they are big about interaction. If I teach a class and students stay silent, it's a sign that I'm doing something completely wrong. So you are going to make me panic completely if you don't interact at all. Okay? So feel free to ask questions. I'm happy to answer as much as I can. And I think it's more productive if we do that. Okay, so as I said, I'm going to teach you, we're going to go through transcriptomics and gene regulation. And basically the idea is that in order to discuss about transcription or regulation, how gene expression is regulated, we need first to know what are the transcript in a cell, what is the product of transcription or regulation. So we'll start this week by looking at transcriptomes and transcriptomics approach, and then next week we'll look at transcription or regulation. Okay, so the first big question is, what is the transcriptome? Does any of you know what is a transcriptome and what are transcriptomics approaches?
It's all the genome that is transcribed in a cell. So it's different from cell to cell, and different from the genome. And it's a, I don't know how to say, something CM thing.
Yeah.
But I guess a transcriptome would be something CM of the genome.
Yeah, a subgroup. Yeah, perfect. So the only, yeah, exactly. The main point is that is the collection of all the transcripts. So not really the genome itself, but the genome when it's transcribed into transcripts. And transcriptomics are the approaches, the collection of approaches, techniques that can be used to study the transcriptome. And to be able to put together this large collection of transcript. So if we think about it, this was the picture of the what was considered the dogma of biology, right? The idea is that there are three types of biomolecules in nature that contains information in a coded manner. So the first one is DNA that contains all the genomic information, and then we also have RNA and protein. And the flow of information is such that you can use one as a template to generate the next type of molecule. So the DNA can be replicated into other DNA, and the sequence of the DNA is used as a template to generate the new copies. But the DNA is also used as a template to generate RNA, and the RNA is used as a template to make corresponding protein. In the initial idea, this was a very deterministic sequence of event, where from one gene on the genome, you would get one molecule of RNA and then one corresponding protein. Obviously, as we know things right now, things have gone much more complicated, and this is a different way to represent the same idea. You have the DNA transcribed into mRNA, into proteins. Here we have also added metabolites that are produced as part of enzymatic reaction. But the main point here is that there is an added layer of complexity that is due to the fact that the transcription can give rise to not only one single type of transcript, it can give rise to many different types of transcript through alternative star sites, alternative splicing, another kind of modification. Then there are post-transcriptional modifications that lead to changes in RNA stability, and all this. Just as in terms of translation, you get post-translational modification, changes in protein functions, and so on and so forth. So the end result is a much more complex system, and transcriptomics are the techniques that allows us to investigate this part of this complex graph and to determine not only the whole collection of RNA, just make a list of them, but also understand more about their function and how they are differentially used. So just as I said, the key aims of transcriptomics are to generate this list. So as you were saying before, this is the full collection of transcript in the cells. So we need to make this. We need to understand what this list of transcript is, not only in one cell, but in multiple type of cells, because as you were correctly pointing out before, the transcriptome is different from cell to cell, from organ to organ. So investigators had to determine, to identify techniques that would allow them to make catalogs of transcript in all these different systems. The second main goal is to understand how a gene is organized. So this, in a way, seems a very simple question, right? A gene has a star site, has a termination site, there is some information in between, and that's it. But as we go through the different techniques, you will see that if you start with the RNA that you extract from a cell, to be able to determine not only all the transcript, but also which are the genes that this transcript are coming from and how these genes are organized, where is their transcription star site, where is the termination site, how is the alternative splicing regulated. These are all complex questions when you are trying to answer them for all the transcript that are present in the cells. And it also includes looking at other post-transcriptional modifications. We are not going through this in class, but something to be aware of is that there are a lot of post-transcriptional modification of RNA molecules itself. This is a very hot area of research right now. There are a couple of colleagues of mine at Boston University that are looking into this, how the RNA itself is modified and how that impacts upon the transcript functions. And then finally, we need to be able to quantify things, right? Most often what you are interested in is to understand if you compare two different tissue, two different cell types, how the transcriptome change. What are the genes that are upregulated? What are the genes that are downregulated? And so not only we want to describe them, but we want to be able to quantify them. And so something that will keep in mind as we go through the different approaches is that there are two types of questions you are trying to answer. One is more qualitative, it's the description of all these mRNA forms. The other one is more quantitative, is how do we measure them? And there are different approaches that we can use to answer this question, so it's important to understand which technique you want to use when you are interested in one aspect or the other. Even if you're not directly doing this experiment, just to understand the papers that you are reading and understand why people have used one approach or the other and what are the limitations to each of them. Okay, so so keeping in mind this qualitative versus quantitative approach, what I will try to do is to go through the different advances that have been made in the area of transcriptomics from an historical standpoint. And we will look first at how things were done in the pre-genomic area, and then how things are done now in the post-genomic area, and what all these techniques together have led us to learn and understand. And we'll try to keep in mind this qualitative versus quantitative difference, and I'll try to point it out as I go through. I have tried to use the same color coding approach that Michele does uses in his slide, so that it's easier for you. But if the things don't make sense, ask me. So we'll start with the pre-genomic qualitative approaches. And first of all, what do we mean with pre-genomic? So the main thing is that, before we do that, another main distinction is that the approaches that we use to study RNA can be classified in two separate classes. There are approaches that are hybridization based and approaches that are sequence based. I'm guessing you all know what hybridization is, right? You have done previous, yeah, okay. So one thing to consider about both these approaches is that in neither case you are measuring the RNA directly. Both of them are two indirect ways to look at RNA. So in the first one, the hybridization based methods, what you are using is a probe, right? So you have your RNA, and depending on the techniques, you do it in different ways, and we'll go through it. But the main idea is that you are not directly measuring the RNA. You are using a probe that is labeled in some way, and then you use it to hybridize your chip or your gel or whatever. And then when the probe lights up, it means that there is where your RNA is present. So so this is an indirect way of measuring things with associated issues about background. Hybridization methods have usually high background, so you need to keep that in consideration. A limited quantitative ability. The other approach, the sequencing, is certainly more specific, but even in this case, you are not measuring directly the RNA. You are first transcribing the RNA into a cDNA, and then you are sequencing the cDNA. So there is a reverse transcriptase step, sometimes an amplification step, that will introduce possible biases. There are some very new techniques to sequence the RNA directly, but they're not much used as of now. We'll go through them briefly, really, at the end of this chapter on Wednesday. But most of the things that you find in the literature are approaches where you sequence the cDNA, not the RNA. Okay, so pre-genomic versus post-genomic. What do we mean with that? The main distinction is that in the pre-genomic area, people were looking at single genes. So we were not able yet to look at the genome in its complexity to define the transcriptome as a whole. We were looking at single genes, maybe a few in each lab, and then all this information were pulled together to try to make catalogs of what was known about RNA. So pre-genomic doesn't mean prehistoric. We are not talking about 50, 100 years ago. We are talking about the time when I was working here in Italy or when I started my PhD. So really the things have changed dramatically in the last 20 years or so. And actually the basis of what was done at that time are the same of what we do right now. It's just that the scale has been largely amplified because of technological improvements. So the way in which you go about sequencing is first to make cDNA. So when people wanted to clone genes, they would isolate RNA from a cell or a tissue of interest, and then transcribe it to make cDNA. Then the cDNA were cloned into plasmids or phages, amplified in bacteria. You had all these clones of E. coli. That's what constituted a cDNA library. And then each single plasmid was sequenced by Sanger sequencing, right? So So this was a very laborious way to go about sequencing and defining every possible transcript in the cell, but that's how we initially did it. And the result was that the different labs cloned and sequenced different transcript and then deposit them in web databases so that other groups could use them and use the sequences. One limitation of this approach, on top of how laborious it was, is the fact that it was hard to get full transcript. So if you think about the biology of the reverse transcriptase, I'm assuming you have studied reverse transcriptase before. The way in which it works is that you use the RNA as a template and then goes through it and make a DNA template that is complementary to the RNA, right? However, the RT is not a highly processive enzyme, doesn't have proofreading like the regular polymerase, and so it doesn't stay on and keep transcribing the old transcript. It's a very long one. What happens is that it transcribes for a while and then it falls off the template. So what, if you go back and you see what these old cDNA libraries were a collection of pieces of cDNA. It was very hard to get libraries that were, that included complete cDNAs. Often these libraries were biased against the 3' end because most often people were doing reverse transcriptase using poly-DT primers. So you can do RT reaction using two different type of primers. You can use poly-DT, which will align with the poly-A of mRNAs. And so you start transcribing from the end, right? And so you keep transcribing from here, and then it falls off. So in this case, the part that is most often sequenced is the 3' end of genes. And often in this cDNA library, the 5' end of genes is completely missing. The other possibility is to use random primers that will not align only to the poly-A, but will align to random places on the transcript. And so sometimes you could start in the middle, sometimes you could start at the beginning, and then you would complete the reverse transcriptase reaction and get more information about the 5' end of the gene. But in this case, what was missing was the 3' end. So how to go about completing these cDNAs? There are a number of techniques that were used, things called RACE, primer extension. I think you have looked at them in previous molecular biology classes. If not, you can go back and look at them in your textbook or material. But really the idea, I don't think it's that important to understand how each single technique works. What is important to understand is the idea, right? So the main problem was that you were working on the protein. So one of the first thing I did when I first arrived in the US was to clone a cofactor we were interested in. So we clone it, we sequence the cDNA, and we got information about the part of the cDNA. And then we went to the database, we looked what else was available there, and there was very little. All the cDNAs that were present were incomplete. So it was difficult for us to know exactly where the transcript would start. And why is that something interesting? Because if you don't know where the transcript start, you also don't know where potentially the promoter is. And so it's very hard to study how that specific gene is regulated if you don't know where it start. You also don't know what is the full structure of the factor, which limit your ability to understand what could be the function of the protein, design mutations, and so on and so forth. And so, that's the idea, that you are trying to work on a gene, on a protein, whatever you are working on, and you have limited information about its sequence. And so what you were doing at that time was to go back and use other techniques that would allow you to start from the piece of cDNA that you had, extend it in both direction, and manage to really sequence all the way to the 5' prime and to the 3' prime. So all this, it's how it was done, and then whatever information you would get and sequence, you would deposit it onto a database. And so that's how initially databases were populated with transcripts. If you were on the other side, you were not directly cloning a protein, but you were working on something and you were going and trying to interrogate these databases, this is the type of information that you would find. So there were a few full-length cDNAs, and those are usually verified. So those are cases like the one I just described you, where someone had gone through the pain of really extending the cDNA, finding the end, the beginning, all the pieces in the middle. And so the full cDNA that was deposited included all the information. But mostly included partial cDNAs, and so things that were non-verified that possibly missed the beginning or the end. EST. So I don't know if you ever heard of EST. EST they're called expressed sequence tags, and I think I have a slide about them. Yeah. So the idea of EST is that it's the same concept of cDNAs, but people were not even trying to sequence the old cDNA. The idea was that because of the limitation of sequencing at that time, people were thinking that sequencing only a short piece of the gene would be sufficient to use it as a tag to know whether the gene was expressed or not in a certain tissue, in a certain cell types. So the process to generate EST tags was the same as before. You would extract the mRNA, perform cDNA synthesis by RT, clone it into plasmids, and then you were sequencing from the plasmid, but you were not trying to sequence the whole thing. You were just sequencing the end joining part of your inserted sequence, so you could use external primers to do that. The databases got populated with these short sequences, 200, 300, 400 base pair, as much as people could get in one sequencing gel, those old sequencing gel. Some of those could be assigned to specific genes because they were specific sequencing that could easily be assigned to a gene. Some others have not been annotated and they're called just EST with a number and the tissue from which they were sequenced. Okay, so how to use any of this approach to measure the amount of RNA? So one possibility was to use EST. And this was probably the first attempt at looking at a large number of genes together and looking at whether they changed or not. So if you were sequencing ESTs from a tissue or from a cell type, you were able to sequence much more than if you were trying to sequence the old cDNA. And so what people tried to do was to sequence ESTs, and then you were getting a frequency of how often a certain EST would come up in your sequencing pool, right? And so if something was highly expressed, you would get a lot of ESTs from a certain gene. If something was very low expressed,